Ryan crawled out of the space and onto the mountain shelf. To the left, over a great gap, he saw his companions emerge. Vaguely, he felt relief, but at that moment, vengeance was the only thing on his mind. To his right, a figure stumbled through the storm, Wilbur making for safety.
Not this time.
Ryan gritted his teeth and pursued. JB may have resolved his own irrational vendetta, but now Ryan was consumed with his own. He limped across the narrow shelf, wind and snow tearing into him, the steep mountain cliff on one side, a bottomless drop on the other.
Stop running and face me, big man!
His beard soaked with blood, Wilbur stole a look over his shoulder and shambled around a mountain bend. He had managed to fling his coat on, but was still bare-chested from his brawl with Ryan and JB. Ryan was powering through the effects of the repeated hellacious beatings he had already taken, running in that familiar state of berserker rage, seeing only red despite the whiteness all around him. Ryan followed his adversary and saw a cluster of rocks beside an icicle-lined cavern. There was only a narrow precipice of snow-covered rock shelf in front of the cave entrance, maybe 2 feet wide at best. Extending below that narrow shelf was nothing but cliff face plunging into the rocky ravine well below. Of course, Wilbur was nowhere to be seen.
Well, shit.
Carefully negotiating that perilously narrow and icy porch, Crotter kept forward into the shadowy cave, Ponga in hand. The dim light from the snowstorm outside didn't extend far into the cave.
Come out of hiding and fight me, you gutless bastard!
There was no response. Wilbur wasn't quite that stupid. Proceeding with caution as he was now, Ryan's blind rage had diminished to the point that he could really start to feel just how depleted his stamina was. The dull and not-so-dull pain radiating throughout his entire body. This was not the brightest idea he'd ever had, but there was no turning back now. He took a few careful steps into the shadows, waiting for his eyes to adjust as he looked up and around, every way from which an ambush could come. Unfortunately, he was too late, turning to look up and behind him. Wilbur had leapt down from an icy ledge just inside the cave entrance, slamming Ryan to the icy floor.
As you wish!
Astride Ryan's torso, Wilbur hammered Carter relentlessly. The Ponga slipped from his deadening fingers. Wilbur was bigger and stronger to begin with, but Ryan had no chance to evade. He tried to buck the man off, but it was like trying to bench press a boulder. Carter's head lolled limply, and Wilbur took a break to gloat. He shook his head.
Always the hothead, aren't you? Couldn't quit while you were ahead.
Ryan's eyelids fluttered, and he swallowed blood as he swam in and out of consciousness. He couldn't feel his arms or legs.
Not far ahead, really. You're just a minor setback. I've had them before. I'll start a new legacy, build a new masterpiece, and your death will serve as the foundation. I'll build a sculpture with your friend's organs. An ode to my glory. A testament that nothing, no one can topple me. You still listening, hothead?
Not for a while now. Are you still full of shit?
Still pinning Ryan down with his massive weight, Wilbur grinned in Ryan's bloody face.
My only regret? You'll never get a chance to see it.
Without looking, he reached for the nearby Ponga.
What?
But it wasn't there.
Ow!
Wilbur grabbed his now bleeding forearm.
You?
Yolanda stepped back. Blood dripped from the blade of the Ponga in her right hand. Her left arm held one of the pole shot weapons, armed and braced against her hip. She was covered in frost, and her lips were blue. Ryan blearily thought she looked almost as bad as he felt.
That was a warning. Get off him, or I'll do worse.
Wilbur got up and faced her, gingerly taking a few steps back. The snowstorm swirled at his back just a few feet outside.
Yolanda, I'm protecting you from them.
No more lies.
She pointed the pole shot at him.
My dear, I've kept you in the dark for your protection. You're safe because of me.
He eyed the spear-tipped bolt of the weapon in her hand.
Go home. Forget this mess. I'll clean up, and we can pretend like nothing happened. You know how much you mean to me. What you've always meant.
Yolanda's head dipped as she lowered the weapon. Still limp on his back, Ryan watched blearily with dismay. He willed himself to get up and do something, but that wasn't going to happen.
There's a good girl.
Wilbur flashed her a big, wide smile.
Don't be upset. This is a man's world. It's not your fault you simply don't have the balls.
Her head lifted, and she met his eyes.
I don't need balls. You always told me all it takes is a little heart.
Eyes wide in disbelief, Wilbur staggered back and toppled over the edge, disappearing in a torrent of white. It was the morning they were to leave. After 3 nights of recovery, the companions stood at the base of Green Nook. Wilbur's duffel bag that JB had swiftly snagged on the way out had contained the companions' weapons that 5 of them had carried into the cave tunnels. Stramp had arranged for Mildred and JB's weaponry to be brought from the crank, including JB's sorely depleted ammo bag. There was even a small amount of ammo for most of the weapons, foraged from the resources of both vills. The companions checked their packs and prepared to take their leave. As Jack had put it in a private conversation among the group, they had chosen to depart from nicer situations than this one in the past.
A part of me wishes I could go with you.
I believe you've got work to do.
Yeah, I do. We do.
Behind them, men and women worked nails into wood, square frames taking shape. Fur-clad women passed timber to Mohawked men as they built new homes together.
Rehabilitation. It will be hard. Our new friends spent years hating us for Wilbur's crimes. Getting them to quit that hate is no easy task.
Never mind the drug-infused, violent shredder culture. Excuse me for a moment.
Mildred walked away toward JB.
I did feel the tension.
Half expected a riot last night.
Ryan's face was a swollen mass of bruises, and he moved stiffly, but he was surprisingly steady on his feet. Both he and Yolanda had experienced early-stage hypothermia, but their Deathlands constitutions had them well on the rebound. Yolanda had suffered more severely after she had been separated from Doc and the others in the tunnel system in the chaos after the battle in the cavern. She had wandered, wet and shivering, finally to stumble upon Ryan and Wilbur's struggles. Mildred had argued for a bit longer recuperation than a few days, but Ryan was eager to shake the snow off his boots, and nobody put up much of an argument. This area had well outworn whatever frosty charm it had had. Doc had remained mute on the subject, but nodded.
Shredders think they were hard done by, which they were. My people think they were deceived, which they were. Both are victims. They just don't realize it.
Then help them bond over that shared pain.
I think things will be just fine. After all, if there's trouble, he'll handle it.
Ryan nodded across the way toward the one talking to JB and Mildred, the hulking form of the man formerly known as Simon.
Where you go?
I don't know. We usually don't. We'll just keep trying to find a home of our own.
Somewhere I can feel my toes. That'd be a nice change.
Well, take this with you. Wherever you go, you must never forget.
Yeah. We'll crank. Whatever that means.
Good.
She waved an admonishing finger in front of his face.
Now you remember the exercises I gave you. If the spasms return, follow the instructions. Don't try and tough it out.
I thank you, Lopers.
He smiled. Through a patchy, peppered beard, it wasn't the prettiest of sights, but it made Mildred and JB smile as well.
All right, let's make a move. You coming, Doc? Just
a moment, friend Ryan.
Yolanda was approaching his side.
Have you been avoiding me?
I am reluctant to face you, for it inevitably will be the last time I do so.
Better that than never.
I have thought of 1,000 reasons to stay, but one counter-argument trumps them all.
Yes?
My friends are my tether to sanity. Without them, I regress. And though it pains me greatly, I would have you remember me as I am now.
I think I understand.
But I must tell you, you have lit my soul with spirit, sown hope where there was none, and made my heart...
The kiss seemed to last both forever and the length of a heartbeat. And when it was over, Yolanda smiled, turned, and walked away. There was nothing more to be said. The group curved around the mountain. Hours passed as they trekked beneath trees, crunching pine cones, and marching over frozen rivers, rocks glittering like quartz.
Strump said that not all the Shredders joined them at Green Nook. He said they're angry.
Well, yes. Regrettable.
I guess I want to know. Why? Strump was their leader. Why wouldn't they follow him?
If I were to hazard a guess, some of his tribe feel he's betrayed them. He's joined the enemy in their eyes.
But there was no real enemy, right? The war was built on lies.
Well, it can be difficult to let go of an ideology when you've spent years justifying its cruel actions.
But it's over. The truth's out.
In some cases, that just makes the regret all the worse.
So, what's gonna happen to them?
Probably try to assassinate Stramp. If that doesn't work and they survive all the infighting, back to banditry, I guess.
Then the truth didn't save them.
No conflict ever ends neat and tidy. Not in my time, and definitely not in this one.
As usual, you are not wrong, Dr. Wyeth.
Oh, I've been wrong plenty lately. The dog I thought hated my guts saved my life. The Baron I believed to be a twisted son of a bitch helped us turn the tide. Jeez, a couple days ago, I even thought Bigfoot was walking among us.
Yeah.
Sorry, John. I didn't mean to. I know you've struggled.
Nothing to be sorry about.
The armorer shrugged.
I got real scared. Never been so scared. Lost my shit.
Ricky and Doc cast each other an anxious look. JB straightened the collar of his jacket as he approached the crest of the hill.
The bastard thing existed. Bigfoot, or the Wraith, or whatever the fuck it was. I didn't imagine it.
It was a monster, all right.
How it affected me is something I'll just have to live with.
Fire blast, JB. You may have been scared of it. Fuck, I was scared of it. Have to be brain dead not to be. Maybe it played with your head for a while. The thing is, you weren't so scared you didn't face it down when it counted.
Yeah, Ryan. I know that. That's how I can live with it.
Oh. Well, good.
They hit the hilltop. Ahead, the ground dropped away to reveal a shimmering plain of green grass. The armorer adjusted his fedora, reset his glasses, and strode straight at the expanse. Deathlands 157 Wraith Winter is a Graphic Audio production. Deathlands and all characters are trademarks owned by Graphic Audio, LLC, used by others under license. Copyright and production copyright 2025, Graphic Audio, LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Richard Rowan. Featuring Richard Rowan as Ryan Cotter and Jack Lauren, Terrence Aselford as J.B. Dix and Doc Tanner, Colleen Delaney as Christy Roth, Lolita Horn as Dr. Mildred Wyeth, Rob Morera as Ricky Morales, Damon Allums as Wilbur, Tatiana Ridgway as Yolanda, Torian Brackett as Reef, Christopher Williams as Stramp, Rainer Gabriel as Cobb, and Nanette Savard as Lottie. With additional performances by Matthew Bassett, Gabriel Michael, Keith Richards, Chris Stinson, Drew Copas, Bradley Foster Smith, Jonathan Church, Jameson Hunt, and Carolyn Kashner. Directed by Matthew Bassett. Story by Adam Frankfurt. Adapted for Graphic Audio by Richard Rowan and Matthew Bassett. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zidney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe.
Executive producers, Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Ben Kling. Theme music arranged by David Zitney, based on a theme by Mark Ashby. The Companions will return in Deathlands 158. If you've enjoyed Deathlands 157, Wraith Winter, check out our whole catalog of Deathlands releases, available now at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for a preview of another epic title in graphic audio.
From the creator of James Axler's Deathlands comes an all-new series, Outlanders. In the aftermath of the Russian-American nuclear holocaust of 2001, America became the Deathlands. Now, two centuries later, a new order emerges to inflict its rule from within fortified cities. Beyond the walls are the Outlands, where a fragile freedom remains. Once a magistrate, fearsome warrior of the New Order, Cain discovers a secret that has damned humanity since the dawn of history. Now, banished to the Outlands, he joins forces with Brigid Baptiste, flame-haired keeper of the Cobaltville Archives, and Grant, brother-in-arms and weapons specialist. In the place that was once called New Mexico, Cain finds the first hidden clues to humanity's future.
Point Bird, Stannis.
Under fire, a Vulcan phalanx turret.
Copy, take it out.
Roger. Hang on, we're taking her into the canyon.
Do you know why I have had you brought here?
No.
Because you belong to me. From the day of your birth, you have belonged to me. As did your father.
Who am I to Baron Cobalt?
I offer you the chance to be one of my chosen ones.
Chosen for what?
To hear the truth. Are you ready to hear the truth, Cain?
We are old. When your race was wild and bloody and young, we were already ancient. Your tribe has passed. All of the achievements of man are dust.
Dust.
Forgotten. We stand. We are.
They're on to us now. They've got some kind of weapon. I don't know what it is, but it's nasty. They almost got me.
Yeah, they're trying to outflank us. The little fuckers sure are light on their feet.
Here they come!
Go, go, go!
Get down!
Catch the ride from the start. Outlanders number one, Exile to Hell. Available in May 2006. Welcome to the new reality. Welcome to the Outlands. It was time for many duties to begin, and the promenade was thronged with movement, with people heading to their duty stations in the administrative monolith. Even though they were of the Cobaltville elite, the people were subdued, many of them wearing self-conscious expressions of carefully calculated neutrality. Necessarily so, since frank self-expression could catch a magistrate's attention, and that could lead to any number of unpleasant consequences. Though he looked for her, Cain didn't see Brigid Baptiste. The only trash hatch they saw was being serviced by a sullen-faced Outlander girl, hardly more than 12 years old, so Cain kept the disc in his coat pocket. Grant took the elevator to sea level. Time was growing short, and Cain wished he could stop off in the day room to wolf down a few sesame seed biscuits and swig a cup of sub. As it was, at least he was feeling a little closer to near-human status again. They walked into the briefing room to find Salvo already standing at the lectern. Two dozen magistrates sat on the rows of hard benches, listening to Salvo with impassive faces. Salvo glanced up when Cain and Grant dropped onto one of the benches, but didn't even raise an eyebrow, so Cain figured Salvo hadn't reached his or Grant's orders for the day.
Banyan and Coleman, intel section, collating Outlands reports. Leduc, Jessup, and Kovacs, agricultural section, security. Oris, Fielding, and Newson, manufacturing section, security. Boone, Grant, and Kane. PPP duty.
Grant and Kane exchanged surprised glances, then shifted their stares to Salvo. PPP duty, pedestrian pit patrol, was a first-year mag assignment. All newly badged enforcers were required to patrol the pits as part of their first-year duties. Generally, the patrol consisted of nothing more than checking ID chips to make sure they were VIL-approved and not bogus. Pit dwellers were stopped at random, ordered to present their left forearms for inspection, and a hand scanner would react positively if the subcutaneous chip was legit. PPP duty was supervised by one senior magistrate, never a pair of them. Pits could be dangerous places, especially for rookie enforcers with no real combat experience, but there hadn't been a major outbreak of anti-mag violence in the Cobaltville pit in a generation. Even the latest in a long line of self-proclaimed pit bosses, a border runner named Guana Teague, kept an exceptionally low profile. And though it was true Boone had been recently awarded his badge and therefore was required to take patrol, assigning two veteran mags to nursemaid him seemed ridiculous and a waste of resources. After the rest of the shift filed out, Kane approached the lectern.
Tell me why.
Why what?
Pit patrol.
It's a standard duty assignment. You should know that by now.
Why the two of us?
Salvo collected his papers and pushed past him.
Why not? Where is it written that two senior magistrates can't be assigned to supervise a PPP?
Without another word, he turned and strode out of the briefing room. Kane turned toward his friend, raising his hands in a gesture of exasperation.
This is your fault, you know.
A young, slender man of Asian extraction re-entered the room and moved toward Kane.
I'm Boone. It's an honor to be working with you.
Let's get this honor over with.
They marched out into the corridor, Boone a bit behind, trying to match their impatient, long-legged stride. They stopped briefly at the tech desk so Boone could pick up a scanner. It was a small cylindrical gadget, not more than 4 inches long, with a two-pronged sensor probe at one end. At the private elevator, they showed the sentry on duty their badges. The sentry punched in the numbers on a miniature 3-digit keypad, and the door panel rolled aside. They stepped into the car. The elevator was one of 6 shafts on sea level that dropped directly to the pits. The largest of the shafts was positioned in the armory and could accommodate an armored wag filled with a magistrate squad, just in case a pit outbreak had to be quelled. The sentry, with studied casualness, pressed a control toggle and set the lift for a fast descent.
Whoa!
The platform seemed to suddenly drop from beneath their feet. Grant and Kane affected not to notice the feeling of their stomachs forcibly climbing into their throats.
Remember the last PPP we worked?
You mean when old Guana was paying hard jack for mag body parts?
What?
A weird fad. Pit dwellers tend to bore easy, need their diversions. What was it? 6 gold creds for a mag nose, 8 for a tongue?
Yeah, and 20 for a set of balls. Getting those was a real bitch.
When was this?
Last year. Right, Grant?
I never heard of that fad before.
No wonder. Triple bad for morale. Salvo did his best to cover it up, but...
Oh! Oh! Oh!
Boone stumbled forward, his face bumping against the door panel. It slid aside, and he froze as the air of the Tartarus pits filtered into his nostrils. Kane and Grant exchanged grins, and Kane pushed the young man out of the car with a hearty backslap.
Let's be careful out there. The price of balls may have gone up.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.